Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Pedagogy of Hope, Reliving Pedagogy of the Oppressed is Paulo Freire's reflective companion to his earlier classic Pedagogy of the Oppressed. Published in 1992 and later translated into English, it revisits the foundations of critical pedagogy while responding to readers, critics, and changing political realities. Rather than presenting a new educational system, the book re-examines Freire's long-standing concerns oppression, dialogue, critical consciousness, and the role of education in social transformation. Its distinctive contribution is the way it places hope at the center of political and pedagogical practice. Freire treats hope not as optimism or sentiment, but as a necessary condition for struggle, learning, and liberation. The book is partly autobiographical, partly theoretical, and partly a dialogue with the global reception of his earlier work. It is therefore useful both as an interpretation of Freire's ideas and as a later statement of his educational philosophy. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, hope as an ontological need rather than a passive feeling. One of the book's most important claims is that hope is not decorative or merely inspirational. Freire presents it as an ontological need, meaning something tied to human existence itself. This matters because he does not separate hope from struggle. People do not fight for change if they have already surrendered the possibility of change. At the same time, he is careful not to turn hope into wishful thinking. Hope alone cannot liberate anyone, and he rejects any version of pedagogy that substitutes moral encouragement for political action. The book, therefore, frames hope as a disciplined orientation toward possibility, sustained through practice, reflection, and collective work. This gives the concept analytic weight. It explains why education matters politically. Because learning can either reproduce resignation or help people imagine themselves as historical actors capable of transforming the conditions that shape their lives. Secondly, a rereading of Pedagogy of the Oppressed through Clarification and Response. The book is not a simple sequel, but a retrospective rereading of Freire's best-known work. Freire returns to the arguments of Pedagogy of the Oppressed in order to explain them more fully, answer misunderstandings, and place them in lived contexts. That is why the text often moves between theory and remembered encounters with educators, students, and social movements. The result is a book that is less concerned with novelty than with deepening interpretation. This is significant because Freire's earlier work became globally influential and also highly contested, so Pedagogy of Hope functions as a corrective lens. It clarifies that his project was never only about classroom technique. It was always about humanization, social conflict, and the possibility of democratic transformation. Readers who know the earlier book gain a better sense of its intended scope, while new readers see that Freire's key ideas were meant to be lived and debated, not merely quoted as slogans. Thirdly, critique of the banking model and defense of dialogical education. Freire continues his criticism of the banking model of education, where teachers deposit information into passive students. In Pedagogy of Hope, this critique remains central because the banking model is not just pedagogically weak. It reinforces domination by training learners to accept authority without inquiry. Freire argues for a dialogical approach in which teachers and students learn from one another in a relationship grounded in respect, questioning, and shared meaning-making. This is not a rejection of expertise, but a rejection of hierarchical teaching that silences experience. The book shows that dialogue is a political as well as educational principle, because it creates conditions for participation and critical thought. By connecting method to power, Freire makes pedagogy inseparable from democracy. His argument is especially important in this later book because it reveals that hope must be enacted through educational relationships, not only declared in abstract terms. Dialogue becomes one of the concrete forms hope takes in practice. Fourthly, critical consciousness and the social context of learning. Another major theme is conscientization, or critical consciousness, the process by which people come to understand the social, political, and economic forces shaping their lives. Freire insists that education cannot be isolated from context. Content should not be chosen as if learners live outside history, and teaching should not ignore class, power, or culture. In Pedagogy of Hope, this emphasis becomes sharper because Freire reflects on how different communities receive ideas in different ways depending on their circumstances. He values learning that begins from the language, experiences, and realities of popular classes rather than imposing a universal script. This makes the book important for understanding culturally responsive pedagogy before that term became common. It also explains why he treats literacy and education as acts of interpretation, not mere skills training. To read the world and the word together is to recognize oppression more clearly and to develop the intellectual habits needed to challenge it. Lastly, a humanized political pedagogy shaped by love, anger, and social commitment. Pedagogy of Hope presents education as an ethical and political commitment rather than a neutral service. Freyr writes from a position of moral intensity, combining anger at injustice with love for oppressed people and faith in human possibility. This combination is central to the book's argument. Serious pedagogy requires emotional seriousness, but also discipline and rigor. The text is especially valuable because it shows how Freire understood education as part of broader democratic struggle, not as isolated classroom reform. He repeatedly links teaching to social justice, cultural respect, and the responsibilities of intellectual work. The afterword by Ana Maria Araújo Freire reinforces this orientation by situating the book within a larger human and historical struggle. Taken together, these elements make the book stand out from conventional educational theory texts. It is less a manual than a reflective intervention, showing how a pedagogy can remain intellectually coherent while staying accountable to lived oppression and the possibility of collective change. In conclusion, Pedagogy of Hope is best suited for readers who already care about education. As a social and political practice teachers, students of critical pedagogy, literacy educators, community organizers, and readers of Freire's earlier work. It is also valuable for anyone trying to understand why Freire remains influential beyond education theory. Since the book connects classroom method to democracy, oppression, culture, and human agency, its practical benefit lies in showing how dialogue, context, and critical consciousness can shape real teaching rather than abstract policy language. Its intellectual benefit is that it clarifies Freire's earlier arguments without flattening them into formulas. What makes the book stand out is its reflective form. It is not only theoretical exposition, but also a rereading of a classic text after years of global debate and real world application. That gives it a rare combination of self-critique, historical depth, and pedagogical purpose. Compared with many books on education, it is less concerned with efficiency than with humanization, making it especially important for readers seeking a morally serious account of learning and liberation. If you would like to support Paulo Freire, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.